When I say intimacy, I use it to mean all sorts of human connections. For me, it doesn't necessarily have to be romantic, sexual, dating, or all that sort of thing. But what I think about in any context of intimacy is there's a sense of momentum or a sense of like going somewhere, of like getting closer. And when I choreograph intimacy for theater and for the stage, distance is actually my best friend. Distance is what makes intimacy look real.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to Life, the University, and Everything, a podcast of mostly academics brewing, sipping, spilling tea, all while sheltered in place during COVID-19 right now. I'm your host, Kat Gonzalez, and this is a special series of Life, the University, and Everything, where we're talking with folks during the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic. As always, showing the human side of higher education, because life is so much more than just the university. So I'll be real with y'all. I recorded this conversation a month ago. Yep, pretty much a month ago. And it's taken me a little while to edit and produce it. So, you know, just being real with y'all. How many brain cells do we have? Very few, y'all. But editing and revisiting this conversation was so worth it and so life-giving and grounding in this time. Because the topic, this show is about intimacy and distance and connection. So intimacy despite distance, and perhaps even intimacy because of distance. In this conversation, I had my friend Kari Barclay on the show. He's a theater director, playwright, and researcher / PhD student in the Department of Theater and Performance Studies at Stanford. And yeah, we just had tea or / coffee and talked about what's keeping us connected during these times and some thoughts about intimacy in the COVID era. I hope you all are well. I hope you are finding ways to connect with the people that you care about most. And I hope you enjoy this conversation.
Hello, Kat.
Oh, hey, you're here.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, what are you drinking today, Kari?
I have some mint tea. I do decaf, since caffeine actually like prevents me from focusing. People, when I have caffeine, people are always like, "Something seems off with you today. Are you tired?" My brain just races faster than my mouth. So I do decaf tea and then pretend it has caffeine and get the placebo effect of waking
up. Awesome. That pretense. You must be a great actor to trick your own mind. No.
And then I put some little sprigs of mint in there from my garden, right outside my back door. We have some little mints.
That is so lovely. That is so exciting. I found myself like walking the neighborhood and like stealing herbs more often during this time.
Nice.
Yeah, I've been like stealing lavender sprigs and and then like picking up eucalyptus leaves. In contrast to that, I'm actually drinking coffee this morning, which is against the rules of the podcast.
Oh my.
But whatever.
That's such a rebel.
That's me. Yes, but it is morning, so it's like coffee time for sure. Yeah, so I'm drinking some dark roast coffee that I got from Verve.
Oh,
so good. I love coffee so much. During this time, I was telling people, I was like, yeah, sometimes drinking my coffee in the morning is like the best part of my day.
Oh, no.
which is really lovely, but also sometimes really sad.
That's true. Yeah. There can be like a lot of calm, like, time in the mornings these days that can be either very meditative or just like, okay.
Yeah, like for sure it's like ritual for me, you know, like putting on the kettle, grinding the beans, getting all my things out. I use a Chemex to brew my coffee, so it takes a little longer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's so lovely. And but then I feel like I start my day like after the quiet time is over, and then it's just like Zoom meeting after Zoom meeting. I'm like, go away. Yeah. So how have you been the past few weeks? What, this is our fourth week under shelter in place?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like so much of life goes in its ups and downs, lots of waves these days. I felt like I've gotten some really lovely creative writing done, which is something I wouldn't usually have as much time for, which is good. And I've been getting to explore my neighborhood, which I really like. Like you taking those walks, actually like enjoying spring. I have this lovely place to hike, just like maybe a 15-minute bike ride from my house where I can see cows. I hang out with them. They're chewing their grass, doing their thing.
Oh, what do the cows have to say?
they say back up, and sometimes they're a little too close for their comfort. They're all like often like clumped together in a group. I saw four of them just like lined up in a row. Very adorable.
The dream. I want to lie down. Yeah, well, that sounds lovely. What kind of creative writing have you been getting done?
Yeah, I've been doing some playwriting, which has been nice. I was supposed to do a show this spring at Stanford called Stonewallin, that because of the quarantine is not happening. But I've been doing making some edits on that, and I've been sending it out some places to read and been getting a few folks excited to check it out. It's a play all about politics in the South, and I actually got to send it to some of my friends who are from there who were involved in taking down some of the Confederate monuments. So it's been neat to kind of get their thoughts and feedback on it, because it's in some ways like about them, and it's about their work of politics that always inspires me. At least you think of the South as infinitely more activist than California sometimes.
Oh, interesting. That sounds super cool.
Yeah.
I too feel like I've been going through like cycles where like I have identified like my stages of grief, my personal stages of grief. And like my anger stage of grief is like always the most, I guess, exciting.
Because
I'm like murmur, like look at all these things that are bad, and like everyone should be doing these things, and then I like feel very energized, and then I'm like, you know, like calling people on the phone being like, make people stop being bad, and then like that's basically how I spent my spring break. And I noticed like, okay, this is a pattern, like this is how I've spent previous years of my life, like in the same response. And after anger comes bargaining, which is always the like most confusing stage of grief for me, but I guess for me it's like after angry calls and like trying to make people do things, and it's like, oh, like helping people and like externalizing grief and fear, and then it's just like nothing.
Oh no!
Then it's just like, I want to take a nap, which is fine, which is very like physiologically understandable. And then I'm like, after I feel tired, then I'm like, okay, like time to write poetry and make some zines, which I'm already like, I have a zine in production, as you know. We are co-producers of a zine launch party. plug. We'll talk about that in a later episode, like in depth. But so I have this like zine going on. And I'm like, wow, great. I'm so glad I'm at this stage of grief where I can just be like kind of mopey and like creative, you know?
Yeah. So, it's okay also not to be creative, to just be mopey.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes
totally.
I go there.
For sure. Yes. Yeah. All very valid. But yeah, so I feel like this pandemic has sort of expedited the grief process for me.
Yeah.
And that I'm like, whoo, like here we go, up and down. Rather than taking place over like a year or two.
Right, absolutely. It's going through all the phases so quickly. I feel like my mind is already on bargaining, but my body's still in denial. So I just had a dream the other night. I keep having dreams about being in really crowded places. Like, and they're like these fantasies of like human beings around me.
So what do you feel? Like, are you excited? Are you like anxious because you know it's illegal?
I'm so excited because in my dreams, I've totally forgotten about COVID, which is why I'm saying like my body is still in denial. Mm. So like in this one dream, I walk through a set of glass double doors, and on the other side is a combination beach, movie theater, parking lot, and shopping mall. All in one place.
Amazing. Wow. And like, so do you get to go through the doors?
So I went through the doors and I just stand there like looking like a kid in a candy shop, just like humans. I don't touch them, so I'm like not at that stage of like being in a crowd and like getting over social distancing, but I kind of like walk close to people and like my shoulder could touch that person and I'm like, whoa, I'm less than 6 feet from a human.
That's so trippy. I've had a couple of similar dreams. One was more like an anxiety dream where like people from my past were like really up next to me, and I was just like, one, like, you're not in my life anymore. Two, why are you so close to me? Like, this is illegal. Go away.
Wow.
So that was one instance. Then I have like these other dreams where I was telling my friend this yesterday because I saw them on Zoom for the first time in a long time. And in this dream, it's just like me walking down the street, just like normal, probably on Stanford campus. And like, I see a friend and we're both Latinos. So we're like, hey, and then we like hug each other. And then like our other friend is like, what are you guys doing? You can't hug.
Oh no.
I know, right? It's like heartbreaking. So I was just like, whoa. Yeah, COVID dreams. Oh yeah, so before we get further, I was wondering if you could introduce yourself and your work to our listeners.
Excellent. Yeah, my name is Kari Barclay. I use they, them, or he, him pronouns. And I make theater. I'm a director, a writer, and also something called an intimacy director, which means I help out with scenes of sexuality, scenes of romantic connection on stage. Which is an interesting thing to imagine myself doing right now. And I do that with sort of an eye towards consent, thinking about responding to the Me Too movement in that sense. And then in my other life, I'm a PhD student at Stanford in theater and performance studies, writing a dissertation about this stuff and getting to meet wonderful folks like Kat.
Aw, awesome. Well, I'm so glad I get to meet wonderful folks like you, Kari, who are doing like actually cool things as opposed to science. JK. So I keep like in my podcast, I keep like bashing science. I think that's the stage of grief that I'm in.
Right.
Like, science is the man. Like, let's do art. Like, go away. Right. You know?
Well, I guess like I feel like science is getting some love or like a lot of love in this moment because of the medical fields. And so maybe we also need some humanity's love. I don't know. We need both.
We do need both, really. And like, I think, yeah. So I saw this one tweet. I don't even know who it was. So I'm just going to plagiarize them. But like, someone put it this way where they said, science right now is giving us hope and the arts are like giving us comfort.
Oh, I love that.
I love that too. And so, and I think like science when done well, like, yes, can provide hope, and hope really being like that feeling you have about something that doesn't exist yet, but that could exist, like possibilities.
Absolutely.
Which I don't think about much because I'm a climate scientist.
Right.
Like, I study the apocalypse, basically.
Right. Okay, so you're all prepared for this. You've been ready for it.
Yeah, yes and no. Like, actually, so there's something in the climate science community and other communities as we all begin to grapple with the reality of climate change. And the feeling of climate grief and climate anxiety.
Yes.
And it's been something I've been thinking about the past year in particular. And just because, like, I try to have, like, a good landscape of, like, all the mental health issues that people are grappling with. So the thing about climate grief and climate anxiety is I understand what it is, but I've never experienced it. Like, personally.
Sure.
And then once COVID started, like, especially the first, like, the week before shelter in place, like, 2 weeks before shelter in place, like, the week of shelter in place, I was like, oh, wow, like, this is what climate anxiety feels like.
Wow.
Of just, like, this impending thing happening, and then, like, in slow motion.
Yeah.
And then combined with climate grief of, like, we are losing things right now and we don't know what we're going to lose in the future. And I was just like, it gave me, like, so much empathy for everyone who struggles with climate grief and anxiety.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, that's a little tangent on science is hope and science is not hope, right?
Yeah.
'Cause, like, that's our jobs, really, is that's what I've been thinking about as a scientist.
That's something that I found helpful and kind of appreciated. I'd read David Wallace Wells's The Uninhabitable Earth, which is about different potential impacts of climate change in his mind in the far future. But I'd been reading that over the summer, and one of the things he talked about was climate's contribution to the spread of diseases. And when we encroach on habitats, when animals come in closer in contact with humans, diseases spread more easily. And I think having read that this summer and kind of actually spoken to a friend about it, like, I'm terrified of this thing that I was reading about.
And then
to kind of witness a global pandemic after that, I kind of mentally prepared myself a little bit, if you can ever prepare yourself for something like this. So I don't know, it made me grateful for scientists who, maybe not giving us hope, gave me perspective.
Yeah, perspective is much needed right now, especially in the early parts, right?
Yeah.
In the sense of, like, giving a framework for people of, like, this is what we can expect, and this is, like, what, just sort of, like, a range on possibilities, which is what I think about as a climate scientist a lot. But I'm also grateful to, like, the psychologists right now for giving us frameworks for, like, how our bodies are reacting to being in solitude. And then, yes, very much grateful to the artists and poets out there right now, just, like, giving language for, like, what we're going through. I was wondering if you, like, what are some salient thoughts that you're thinking right now about intimacy and distance in the COVID-19 era?
Yeah, I think it's a challenge that, like, a lot of folks are working through. And one of my friends was just telling me about being on Tinder right now. And like, apparently a lot of people are moving to online dating in kind of this moment, understandably. But I'd kind of think people would drop off those platforms since, like, in-person connection, like, other than via Zoom, wouldn't be possible. So I think lots of people are looking for romantic connections, looking for those types of things. When I say intimacy, I use it to mean all sorts of human connections. For me, it doesn't necessarily have to be romantic, sexual, dating, or all that sort of thing. But what I think about in any context of intimacy is there's a sense of momentum or a sense of, like, going somewhere, of, like, getting closer. The question I think is, how can we get closer while being physically apart? And when I choreograph intimacy for theater and for the stage, distance is actually my best friend. Distance is what makes intimacy look real and look fascinating, because we love people from across the stage seeing each other, making that eye contact. And we cannot wait for Romeo and Juliet to touch their palms together and for them to have that moment of connection. And so we have distance that leads to proximity and to touch, but right now proximity and touch seem out of reach. Mm-hmm. But how can we create that same sense of anticipation even without people being able to like manifest a connection necessarily in touch and in the usual ways they've done it? So the thing I'm trying to figure out is how can I build a sense of anticipation in myself and in the people around me that our relationships can get closer, even when that anticipation isn't for what it might usually be for.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm curious to hear if you have any ideas about like tangible ways people can build in anticipation. And also, this is also semi-selfish because I am in a relationship and with my boyfriend of 3.5 years, and we are sheltering in place separately. We do not live together, which has made it really interesting because I now have an internet boyfriend.
Right.
So something that we've tried to do in our online dating is to replicate reality, is to have our date night on Sundays and our like tea on Thursdays and etc. And I'm wondering from your perspective, like, what do you think about either friendships or romantic relationships who are kind of struggling moving their relationship onto an online platform? And like, what are some tangible ways that we can direct people to like heighten anticipation and vulnerability in a digital context or non-digital context?
Yeah. I'm figuring it out alongside everybody else and trying to figure out what to make of this moment. But something that I think is important is like sharing experiences with people online. So it's not just, okay, we're going to come online and have a conversation, which is really nice and is something very needed. But I think when people connect on a date or people are trying to get closer to a friend, what we do is we look for experiences to share. So one of my friends is hosting a dinner party in the coming weeks where we're all separately, all the guests are going to make the same recipe and then share it together, like at this dinner party. And I think that experience of cooking, it's like, oh, this is a really intimate thing. Is we're not just talking, it's like we're taking this step physical with our hands, and like my hands are kneading the same dough that my friend's hands are kneading at Oakland. And like, that's kind of, it's kind of cool. I can think about touch and how can that still happen? And can we still be engaged with that, with each other over digital platforms? Or thinking about, there are a bunch of artistic experiences, online concerts, things like that, that you can still attend. And they're stimulating, and it's something to share with other people, to talk about with other folks. I think it's a little more difficult for folks like for like you and your boyfriend to be able to like, you know each other really well. So these are kind of things that are more for friends, but I think for folks who've known each other, sometimes it can help to set little milestones of I don't know what it'll be, because offline it's usually things like, this time we'll take a vacation together, or this time I'll go meet my partner's family or something like that. But milestones of, we're going to read a book together, or maybe I'll write something in the we'll both read this book, write things in the margins, send it to each other, and then see what we each wrote there. Like, sharing intensive experiences that require time and thought that still convey some kind of connection.
Yeah, I love those ideas. That's awesome. It really ties back to me what you were saying before about intimacy being measured by momentum, really. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a huge question right now that we're all grappling with, is like with those milestones, you can sort of build in momentum, but like sort of what's the limit on that momentum in a digital era or in a separation era, right? Whereas like, I don't know, as far as Zoom goes, like there's only like so close you can get, like maybe the closest people can get is like having a really deep conversation and they're crying. Like that's, maybe that's like the most vulnerable one could be. But then at the same time, like then what do you have to look forward to the next time that you meet with this, like either significant other or close friend? Like how do you think about momentum?
And I think that's so hard with the future being uncertain, like long distance relationships often are like, we're going to look forward to the time where we're meeting up in the same place. And it's like, now we don't know when that is. And it's really, I think it's important to first like recognize the difficulty of that. And that, yeah, this is really tough for me to feel that anticipation, feel that sensation of Romeo and Juliet, knowing they're going to touch across the room. And it's hard not to have that touch in some ways. And hopefully, I wish all the folks that they're living with, that they have somebody who they're living with, who they can give a hug, who they can have some connection to physically, because I think a lot of us really need touch right now. And so without being able to look forward to that with a romantic partner who's in another shelter in place elsewhere, or with friends, that's really difficult. So that anticipation, I think, yeah, that it's finding those things to look forward to, like crying over a conversation. If you can look forward to that, there's no substitute. And I think that's the challenge, like professionally, personally, that all of us, I think, or a lot of us are going through, is how do I keep momentum in my life? Like in theater, like I had all these shows that I was planning right before everything got canceled, and it's not enough for me to say, okay, when this all is done, I'm going to work on them again, and I'm going to be excited for that. If I spend my whole life thinking about when the pandemic is manageable and under control, and when I can get back to normal life, if there is such a thing as normal life, like life is going to change. If I spend my whole life thinking about that, I'm not really being present. So I'm looking for those imperfect bits of anticipation that I can build in my life.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the concept of being present right now. I'm curious to get your perspective. Have you found it easier to be present with people right now? Or what have some unanticipated challenges been with being present? So like my thinking on this is that in one aspect, the future doesn't exist. Like it's so uncertain. Yeah. I can't even plan my birthday party in June. Like, who knows, right? And in some ways, like, that's a loss. Like, and we grieve for that in anticipation. But at the same time, it's bringing us back to the present moment where we only really do have the present moment. And perhaps that's, like, forcing us to be more present. Yeah. On the other hand, I've noticed with myself, like, being on Zoom and having multiple windows up, it's easy to be only half present.
Yeah.
Like with my, say like the upper half of my body, if you want to talk about body language, or my eyes, and also my brain is doing this thing where it's tricking me into thinking that I'm like sitting across the table from you, Kari. We're having this like awesome conversation, but then I like turn and like, you're not here. So like, how are you thinking about like being present and like how that relates to being vulnerable with people and like intimate with people?
Yeah, I'm curious. Yeah, I'll speak about that in a moment, but I'm curious like what conversations have felt intimate, have felt present in this time when you have felt present with folks.
Yeah, for me, it's been mostly Zooms, I guess, have been like the most intimate. And when I make the Zoom the full screen, so it's just the person's face.
Yeah.
I guess like when it's been a conversation with friends. Yeah. And like even with my boyfriend, we've had a couple great date nights, and like he ordered me DoorDash from the same like genre of restaurant. And we like share that experience. And then like just like spent hours and hours and hours talking with one another, which is what we would do in normal life. Right. Thinking to a friend relationship though, like basically a situation where like one would be able to like pause and just like show how vulnerable.
Well, and yeah, I think what you were saying about we started out this conversation talking about silence, and I think that can be really powerful right now. And yeah, just responding to folks' body language is, yeah, you're present in a different way. Yeah, I mean, something that makes people very intimate right now and can create that proximity is a lot of us are like wounded, like we're going through grief, like we are visibly hurting. And in a lot of life, we aren't giving people space to talk about the ways in which they're visibly hurting. And it's kind of amazing that, like, maybe it's just because I work in theater, but every work conversation I have like starts with a very concerned, like, please, I really want to check in with you. Like, encouragement to actually like take care of ourselves, things like that, care for each other. That is making us present in a different way, is recognizing that vulnerability. I think one of the challenging things I've had in conversations is you don't know, everybody processes, is at a different stage of grief, and we all process things differently. And so there's some conversations I have that I really want to feel fun, that I want to feel normal, that I like want to forget about the pandemic sometimes. And another friend will be at the stage of really wanting to talk about it and being deep in grief, or vice versa. And it's like we're each in different emotional places, and sometimes that mismatch can like keep us from being present. I'll still be thinking about the past, thinking about the future, and a friend will be like, oh no, I want to watch this fun Netflix show with you. And it, that mismatch can be such a challenge. I've also found this kind of the exact opposite of what you had just said. I found voice calls on phone really intimate right now, because it's a method that I was using much more before the pandemic in a way.
Okay.
And I feel like often on work calls when I'm doing video, it's there's a thing of having to be on all the time. Because it takes, in a lot of ways, so much effort to transmit body language across this medium.
Yeah. It's like double performance, right?
Right, exactly. And there's something really nice sometimes about a voice call across the country where you can kind of let your body language guard down, and it becomes the voice, it becomes something in your ear. I don't know, it's kind of paradoxical, but like I've been having, every time I talk to my grandmother, who is right now in a nursing home, where there's actually been a COVID case reported there. So things are really intense there, but having a conversation with her, we're able to leave those silences. It feels like the conversations we've had the rest of our lives in a way. So there's a kind of continuity that I find really refreshing.
Yeah, I love that. I could see that for sure. I've been definitely enjoying the voice call conversations I've been having, because something I do when I have one on my schedule is that I say, okay, like, let me put on my shoes. Like, I'm going to go for a walk. Like, this is my time to go outside right now.
Yes.
And and it's cool because like you said, you can allow for silences. Which is very important. And I'm noticing that that's something that is true that may not be for video chats with the video turned off. So something I've been thinking about is how we are kind of, we're able to hide on video chats. How that is like, that's a barrier to vulnerability sometimes.
Yeah.
Right. So like if say you and I weren't that close and this conversation got to a place that was like in like the edge of my comfort zone, something I could do is turn my video off.
Right?
And then like my voice would still be here, but like that would be like hiding and like lack of vulnerability. Go ahead.
I definitely use the turn off video to hide like unglamorous parts of my life of like, oh gosh, I'm really hungry, I'm gonna be having a snack, but I don't want to like the people who I'm with to like see me like on this weird camera angle, like having my trail mix. Whereas in person, I wouldn't be as worried about that. So it's somehow there's a way that, yeah, I think you're right. People can turn off the, when we turn off the, what happens if we show the unprofessional things that we would usually turn off our video for?
For real. And I think that even just drives this point home of just like when you said unprofessional things, it's just like we are having professional conversations in the same space that we're having like intimate and like friendly conversations right now, and like the code switching is really hard for a lot and like in some situations, like yeah, I do want to be professional, and also like why are all my coworkers in my living room right now, and like one might imagine, but at the same time it's just like, oh, like I'm on my couch, like this is where I would invite a friend over, or like this is the exact same spot where my boyfriend sat like the last night we saw each other before quarantine. Like you kind of replicate that intimacy because it's like the home, you know? Yeah, I feel like our brains are doing so much work in the background, we don't give them credit. We're like, oh, like everything's fine, we'll just have all these conversations, but then our brain is like, what's going on? Like, am I performing right now, or am I like trying to be vulnerable right now?
Right. And how, yeah, I mean, what is the barrier of a professional relationship when right now we are all trying to care for each other? And like, if I, what does it mean if I like, if we care for people who are usually our supervisors, like, what does that mean? Like, we're both, we're trying to make it like a real, or I am trying to make it a two-way street of like generosity, but then sometimes there are certain kinds of vulnerability that you really want to keep out of a professional environment, just in terms of like, you don't want your colleagues to have to do the work of therapists necessarily. So it's a really, yeah. Cause also we know that labor falls disproportionately on folks based on identity, on women, things like that. So it's a really, you're totally right. Our minds are in these total split code switching modes and blurring public and private, which is this is what my dissertation about intimacy is all about, is intimacy is being private in public.
Right.
So now that mixture is hard work for all of us.
Yeah, and hopefully a tool for empathy for those who have chosen to live their private life out in public for the greater good.
Yeah,
I'm interested now if you've been doing anything to foster intimacy with friends or other relationship, family. You mentioned phone calls with your grandma. But what are some things you've either done or thought to do right now that are not over a video chat or perhaps over a phone call? Like, what are ways we can like unplug but still be intimate with people?
Yeah, I couldn't ask for better housemates to be quarantined with right now. And every morning we said at 10 a.m. we do deep breathing exercises together and then do a check-in where we see how we're doing emotionally and say something that we're grateful for. And it's so powerful to start that out each day because breathing just makes space for emotions to come in. the check-in is an acknowledgement, and often we're at very different places emotionally. So when one of us is feeling low, the other of us might be riding high and is able to offer some comfort there. And so, yeah, and you were saying with your boyfriend, you did found particular days of the week that we're gonna have this standing commitment. And I think that structure of structuring relationships, I think, is so important right now. Yeah, I'm the other thing is, how do we deal with those in-person connections that are like in public when we're run into a neighbor, something like that, that's 6 feet apart. And something that we learn from intimacy directing, I'm gonna get real like theatrical, I'm gonna go into my like my all my research work, is my reaction when I see somebody is I tend to turn or put an arm in front of myself or something like that, if like, okay, I'm gonna breathe away from you. But actually having an open heart and actually facing somebody chest to chest, but just with a far distance apart, allows for much more vulnerability across 6 feet, right? Like when we have our most connected conversations, they are with a heart open. But when I go to the grocery store, I call it like the social distancing like matrix, where I do like in the Matrix movie where you dodge. I feel like I'm dodging humans, trying to like turn away from them to get to get out of their way and things like that. So instead of letting yourself go into fight or flight, it's hard. I'm often when I see people are going to fight or flight because I don't want to get infected or I don't want to infect other people. How can I keep my heart open and be like, hello, good to see you, neighbor. I'm going to walk very far around you, but not make you feel like you're bad for just existing in the same space as me.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, a lot of themes of consent are coming up in this social distancing era. Just like, when is it okay to enter people's space? And a lot of people have never had to think about that before.
Totally. Yeah, I wrote a blog post about this in relationship to intimacy directing, and something I navigated the other day was somebody's dog ran up to me. And normally that would be something that some people, like, it would make them panic. And that would be something non-consensual or crossing a boundary. And here I was like, okay, your dog being here is fine, but you shouldn't be close to me. So I'm going to say I'm okay with this dog here. Just don't retrieve your dog. Just wait until your dog gets bored of licking my ankle. And I'll send your dog back to you when they're bored of me. So, like, there's these little dances of consent and comfort zone that we're all having to work through right now with strangers. It's awkward, and I think that's, as a consent educator doing consent work, we know that these conversations are often awkward, but now the world is having them, and I'm glad they are.
And now that I think about it, a lot of us are like having these conversations in the digital world too. Because like sort of like what we were just saying with video chatting, people are in our space and we allow them to be in our living room. But then I feel like a lot of us, myself included, are grappling with how much is too much. Like, when can I see people? Who should I see? Like, who should I not see? Like, who's allowed here? So it's been a very interesting time to like grapple with like boundaries and like, when is it okay to like cross them? Like, who will I take an emergency Zoom call for?
Right.
Maybe like only three people. Right.
Yeah. And I think if for folks who are socially distanced and like feeling lonely or solitude, there can be a desire to kind of let down all boundaries. Like, I will like talk to anybody at any time. Like, maybe I've been feeling that a little bit myself. Thinking about, well, okay, like what does the socializing in my life mean for me? How do I make those conversations worthwhile and give myself still the solitude I need? It's like, it's the challenge of being an extrovert in this era. It's like, just give me anything.
Totally.
Sometimes I should probably be better at setting those boundaries and figuring out what rhythm of communication, what relationships are going to be important to me.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so as we come to a close, I'm wondering if there's anything you're looking forward to in the next week that involves connection or intimacy with anyone.
Oh, let me think.
Maybe like a connection resolution.
Connection resolution. Interesting. Tell me what you mean, connection resolution.
So I'll go first, I guess. So even in this conversation, I'm thinking like, what is digital? What is real? I really liked what you said, like bringing more I guess, presence into like physical reality. And so like, how can we do the same thing like with our hands or like baking or whatever? So I guess one thing I want to do is to steep more on that. That'll be number one. And then number two is that like, I want to finally get off my butt and like write some flipping letters, you know?
Nice! Yes!
Or postcards, you know? Yeah. So that's my resolution.
Nice. Well, that triggers my memory. Like, the exciting thing I'm doing today is, after this, I'm doing my weekly grocery run. And I'll be doing some baking this evening. And I'm baking some family recipes. And going to be shipping some base goods to folks I know in San Francisco who I haven't seen, to family, things like that.
Oh, that's so lovely.
So that will, I think it's feeding people is always something that's like been really intimate, and it's a way to give somebody a sensory experience. Like I said, we need to communicate with each other other than through flat screens. How do we still taste the same things together? How do we still have tactile touch of the same things together? So doing some of that. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's lovely.
And then, yeah, and as well, my department is having our something we call First Fridays, which are, we do a little lecture and talk in the department, and it's our first one online. But I'm really excited because it's a sort of informal time to chat. Like, it doesn't have to be one of these, either a professional thing or a very concerned emotional check-in, right? It can actually be a time that we've actually demarcated if this is something where we're going to hang out. And I think little things like people are still doing happy hours, social hours, things like that. Those, making those routines really useful.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Kari. This was a lovely conversation.
So good. I feel like I learned a ton. And yeah.
Me too. Thanks for listening to Life, the University, and Everything, the podcast of mostly academics brewing, sipping, or spilling tea. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also visit our site at anchor.fm/LUEpodcast. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes, and also let the universe know on the socials. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at LUEpodcast. Submit questions for our not advice section to our email, lifetheuniversityandeverything@gmail.com, or send us a DM on Twitter. Life, the University, and Everything is produced and hosted by me, Kat Gonzalez. Please tune in next time.